This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. And you are listening to episode 28. I wanted to start off this episode by thanking Ian Castle and Mike Schellinger for inviting me to the Microcap Leadership Summit. It was a fantastic event where I met so many of you who listened to each and every episode. I have to say, it was a huge thrill for me to be recognized finally for not having the same name as the owner of the New England Patriots. But in all seriousness, thank you so much for listening, and I was quite humbled by your kind words. If you like what you hear, I ask that you leave a review on iTunes so that more investors can learn about the world of microcap stocks. Now back to business. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Sean Ittings, co-author of the book Intelligent Fanatics Project. Sean co-wrote the book with my episode one guest, Ian Castle, and its purpose is to show how great leaders build sustainable businesses. Why is this important and how does it correlate to microcap investing? In almost every episode, we discuss the importance of management and the CEO. These are the teams and individuals that we are betting on. The Intelligent Fanatics Project highlights eight managers who have turned small businesses into very large ones. As Ian says in the preface to the book, all great companies started out as small companies, and Intelligent Fanatics founded most great companies. The goal for this interview is to learn about Intelligent Fanatics, look for common elements that these leaders have, and what we can learn from them to become better microcap investors, business people, and entrepreneurs. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 28 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Sean Ittings, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old. QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to stocknewsnow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Sean Ittings on the program. He is the co-author of the book Intelligent Fanatics Project. Sean, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Thank you very much, Bobby, for having me here and taking the time to chat.
It's great to have you on the program, and thank you so much for coming on. I know it's been a busy schedule for you of late, and I do appreciate your time. So, I just got back from the Microcap Leadership Summit where, just amazing speakers and a great event overall. And, they're handing out copies of Intelligent Fanatics Project. And I've had the opportunity to read a good bit of it myself. And, what I'd like to cover today is to talk about the book and your background. And with that, let's start with your background and how did you get into microcap investing?
Sure, Bobby. So I've taken an unusual path to investing and microcaps. And so I started in music school. A friend of mine who I worked with introduced me to the markets, and I've kind of been interested in the markets years beforehand, but he kind of got me into it. And so this was approximately 2007. And so I witnessed the financial crisis in real time, and that really gave me a really good chance of learning value investing specifically. And so with me, how I got into value investing to begin with was I had no clue what I was doing whatsoever. And so a common tactic I, as well as many musicians and artists, what they do is they usually try to steal, copy, mimic know, all of the greats and try to figure out, you know, what they did, copy them, and then kind of get your own voice. And so I thought to myself, who's the best investor? I had no clue at the time. And of course, I found out Warren Buffett was on the top. And so I went out to the local library, picked up the book, Intelligent Investor, and, you know, read as much as I could. And then since I was working on my degree for music therapy, I was reading about the Mr. Market analogy and all of Benjamin Graham's thoughts on investing. And of course, this was happening at the time of the financial crisis. And it was, like I said, an awesome opportunity to learn. Of course, I was losing money with all of my investments and learning as much as I could along the way. Mm-hmm. And so kind of fast forward a couple years, I was learning more, and I went to South Korea, taught English, came back to the U.S., worked for an independent wealth manager, and there I helped analyze stocks, helped run business. However, I didn't really enjoy, you know, like closet indexing. I really wanted to attain unusual results for my clients, so I set off on my own, opened up my own investment advisory firm called Unconventional Capital Wisdom, and I started investing my own money, friends' money, and family. And then I also started writing on Speaking Alpha and was quickly gravitating towards the small cap and micro cap area, of course, to find an edge. And it wasn't too long for me, and I found my way to Micro Cap Club, where I've been really focusing on learning as much as I can about micro caps. And that's kind of how I got into the biz.
So what is the Intelligent Fanatics Project?
So it's a book, of course. It says project, but it's a book. We have other things in the works, but it's a collection of 8 case studies on some of the greatest companies in terms of shareholder value returns of the 19th and 20th century. So each of these companies, on average, generated roughly 25% compounded annually for nearly 4 decades. And so, in short, these leaders and businesses were extraordinary. They outlasted the competitors, and they walloped the S&P 500, Dow Jones, and whatever index over the same time periods by many, many, many factors. So the book is really similar with William Thorndike's book, The Outsiders, and it's trying to deduce some of the common characteristics between the leaders of each company and how they ran their business. However, unlike The Outsiders, Intelligent Fanatics Project focuses less on the capital allocation aspect and more on the qualitative, operational, and cultural aspects of each of the businesses. So in those areas are what Ian and I kind of believe are the differentiating factors between, you know, a mediocre business and a phenomenal business.
So going off of that, I have to know then, you know, what then is an intelligent fanatic? And can you provide an example from the book? Not too much. We want people to read the thing. So, you know, just an overview.
Sure. So I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with Charlie Munger, and he has first coined the term intelligent fanatics years ago, maybe a couple decades ago, in one of his talks. And it's used to describe leaders who are so talented that they can do things that mere mortals can't. And they possess this business skill that's otherworldly and can make their own luck, kind of regardless even of how poor the industry is. So you take, for instance, like Sam Walton. But there's one intelligent fanatic, Charlie Munger, often cited, you know, in that specific speech when he first started saying intelligent fanatics and afterwards, and it's John H. Patterson of National Cash Register Company. And he's cited it. He's given some examples of how he kind of fit the intelligent fanatic mold. However, there's like a lot of things that I was questioning about. So kind of give the listeners an example or a reason why, you know, he kind of fits the mold is, if go back into like the 1900s beforehand, or a little bit beforehand that, if you go into a retail establishment, you'd go walk in, you want to buy a, you know, a widget or whatever, and you go up to the clerk, you hand them the money, and that person just stuffed it in like a little box and then records it. So there was a huge opportunity for people to, you know, steal, many of the employees to steal. And so this was a huge problem that many people didn't really care about. But this cash register came about, but it's still, there was no market for it really in like the 1800s, the late 1800s. And Patterson, he was highly successful operating coal yards and coal retail and other operations of sort in Dayton, Ohio. And he went head first into an industry that was not proven, which was the cash register. And what he did was he bought, I think it was two cash registers sight unseen, put them into his retail establishment, which had been losing profits for a while. And they had high prices, low competition. So he found that these cash registers immediately made those operations profitable. So he was really struck by the power of this new piece of technology. And so he went ahead, got the business, and then so, again, from nothing, he was laughed at by his business peers. He was laughed at by pretty much everybody for getting into this business. However, he almost single-handedly built the cash register market himself. And even as competition came into the market, NCR destroyed, obliterated competition. It's just amazing what he was able to do and the fanatical focus that he had with all aspects of the business. And so what's interesting is the company performed very well for decades and decades until his passing, and even afterwards, and even today, the company is still operating. You know, it's over 100 years later. And then, you know, maybe you go into like a small retail store and you see people with iPads and other tablets, but you notice you go into like a restaurant or hotels or those type of establishments with point-of-sale systems, and you'll notice that most of them still have NCR written on them. So it's still a company that's pretty much dominating the niche.
One thing I saw that was really interesting to me when reading the book is that it seemed like what most intelligent fanatics would do is that they were good at taking what may have worked in another industry and turn it into what would be deemed unconventional and apply it to their own industry and find success doing that. You know, that's what I learned, especially with John Patterson, where, you know, he had all these incentives for his sales team and they were able to, you know, he you know, even though it was only cash registers, he wanted to make these salespeople want more. They aspire for the good life, you know, so that they would go out and sell more registers. You know, so sorry, I'm going on a rant here. I was happy you said John Patterson. I that was my favorite chapter in the book, actually. You know, so on that point, you know, how do you identify an intelligent fanatic? You know, what are their qualities?
Great question, Bobby. So I think today, an investor looking for an intelligent fanatic-led organization can only get so much information from quarterly or yearly filings. So it's usually pretty much every one of these companies that we highlighted. It's only after many years of success that most of these companies sit down and actually start to write their values down and their cultural values down out clearly on their annual reports and other PR and such. And so it's a little bit more easily years later to observe from the outside that, you know, they have a high quality company. So to get an understanding of the qualitative aspects of a business and the quality of an operator early, investors benefit, you know, from the direct contact with all of this business's stakeholders. So know, customers, managers, employees, and competitors. So it's really Phil Fisher's scuttlebutt. It's like you have to get out there. You have to really understand. Because many of the case studies in Intelligent Fanatics Project, we take historical pieces from the beginning and highlight some of the things that they were saying in the beginning. But you had to, you know, be directly in contact with, you know, John H. Patterson, Sol Price, whoever, to really understand what they're trying to do, because otherwise you wouldn't really know. And so I think one of the key things to look for is the quality of the corporate culture. Mm-hmm. So how are the leaders treating each stakeholder, and who are the highest priorities? And so, interestingly, you would expect, or it seems logical, that for X company to be giving 20% returns annually, that shareholders would be at the top of their list of priorities. And actually, most of the cases, shareholders are last of their priorities. And it's usually treat the employees really well, employees will treat the customers really well, and they'll come back. And then, of course, all of that leads to shareholders getting returns and making them happy, keeping them for the long term. So as for many main characteristics of Intelligent Fanatics, Ian really boiled it down to a great formula. So they have an unusually long-term vision coupled with a focus, energy, intelligence, and integrity, and have the capacity to really execute. So generally speaking, these leaders will have a large amount of skin in the game, and sometimes they might not have huge equity stakes. So take, for instance, like Nucor. Ken Iverson really didn't have a huge equity stake, but he had compensation package that was totally in line to think like an owner. Or a new case that Ian and I wrote up on the Microcap blog, DaVita. And so Ken Theory, he's never really had a huge equity stake in the business, but of course he has a compensation package that's directly in line with shareholders and ownership mentality. And so one thing that, of course, comes up, and Buffett's talked about this before, but all of those qualities are pretty much necessary, but not all to like a high, high, high degree. Execution definitely is a high degree, and integrity. And so those who possess all but integrity just run from them. They are horrible. They'll steal money from, you know, other stakeholders, and eventually they'll come and steal money from shareholders.
So it almost sometimes seems like it's tough as it's happening to identify the intelligent fanatic. You can kind of like, you can see like, oh, this, I think this person might have all the qualities, but it's almost like a retrospective, you know, after the fact. But, you know, I don't know. Am I kind of on the right path with that? It's still quite difficult to find.
You're right. It's difficult in the early innings to say somebody's an intelligent fanatic. Mm-hmm.
You can say they're intelligent, but maybe not so much the fanatic.
Exactly. Or they could be a psychopath. And you don't want them. And so for us, we're trying to build the mental model, and it's not a guarantee that you'll be able to find them. I think it is possible to find them. Somebody who has the characteristics, they have a business that has a huge market to grow into, and they're working on the early stages of a great high-performance culture. So those are the things that you kind of have to look for, and then you have a couple, say 5, 10 people who you think might be and might need those type of opportunities, and then, of course, 3 of them won't work. Maybe 1 or 2 will. So it's trying to, you know, work your slight diversification or concentration into your favor, as well as, you know, trying to understand fully the businesses and the managers that you're partnering with.
So then, and you've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but just to give like a full answer to what I've been curious about is, you know, how do intelligent fanatics relate to microcap stock investing? You know, what is the correlation?
So if you think about it, I've always loved the movie, Monty Python. They're looking for the Holy Grail. So the Holy Grail, I think, to investing is finding, say, Walmart, finding Berkshire Hathaway, Southwest Airlines, or insert some other 100-plus bagger as a microcap. So almost all of these great-performing stocks started as small companies or microcaps. And if you can find only one of these young companies and build the proper conviction to hold them for years, and I'll add in, that's the really hard part, you can build life-changing wealth. And the only thing is that microcap land is, you know, it's full of poor, eternally mediocre businesses. And there's a lot of bad managers. But of course, there's some good ones too. But I think that's true throughout microcap, small cap, mid cap, large cap. So it's really, one must be able to separate the wheat from the chaff early on. And it comes down to, you know, whose mental model on an intelligent fanatic is better, and who has the ability to maintain conviction in the company as it continues to perform. Because, of course, it goes up two times, a lot of people would just sell it then, and then they just leave it alone, and then it multiplies 10 more times afterwards. So it's having that conviction. Of course, like I said, that's the difficult part. Finding, you know, intelligent fanatics early on is a bit easier compared to the holding part.
That is without question. Especially for those full-timers out there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So this actually goes right into my next question again. And, you know, it almost seems like intelligent fanatics is like the embodiment of the theme that I hear throughout every one of my interviews, and that is management is key. You know, so when assessing if a microcap company may have an intelligent fanatic running the ship, you know, is it kind of like an all or nothing thing? Like, can you still find a potential 100 bagger or even just a good company to invest in that's not being run by an intelligent fanatic?
I think that's a great question. And so with any part of investing, I think this holds true, that there are many ways to skin a cat, and of course that's in microcaps, that's true. So there are many ways to make money in stocks in general. However, microcap investing, you know, you can work off the liquidity, you can work off informational advantage or analytical edges, but you know, these days it's becoming a little bit more difficult with technology advances, you know, quantitatively keeping up with net-nets. If it's net-net today, it's going to be way different than, say, net-net back in Benjamin Graham's days. Mm-hmm. And some people can get by on, you know, these little niches, or they can get by on, say, like short-term, non-fundamental signals. So finding a great leader or intelligent fanatic isn't necessary for these people. And they'll have, you know, other mental models or other ways that they can make money and succeed. And some people are fantastic at it, and, you know, great for them. But I think with these strategies might not be the highest long-term return generators. So for somebody to work off that, they might be able to make a living off doing that full-time as a private investor. However, if you want 100 baggers, 1,000 bagger, it seems to be that, you know, over, say, 5, 10 years or more, investors should focus more on the quality of the operations and the quality of management. So if you think a microcap starts off with business risk, pretty much a higher business risk, concentrated to, say, one product or service, and it makes a special manager and organization to weather temporary setbacks. Because there's a couple instances where, you know, something will come in and it will, you know, it can really hurt the company. But a higher skilled, better prepared, more fanatical manager can weather those temporary setbacks and they can continue to succeed. And so, like, without the conviction in the management teams from investors, it'll be extremely hard for an investor to weather those storms too. And Charlie Munger's talked about one way of going about investing would be to catch a big wave and surf it. And so you can take, for instance, I think like John Patterson would be a good example of this. He was pretty much the first mover in the cash register market. He built it practically himself with his, you know, his early business at NPR. And he wrote it. But I think he was so successful because he had qualities that were so superior and so superior in creating a company that could dominate, you know, reach up to 90% of market share in, you know, the cash registers at one point. And for somebody to continue to go from wave to wave to wave, like Jeff Bezos comes to mind. He started off, he dominated the online book retailing. And he's jumped from wave to wave to wave. He's on, you know, like AWS now. He's on this and that. And so for somebody to jump from wave to wave, that an idiot can't do that. A psychopath can't do that. An intelligent fanatic can. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about it, look at many of the extremely successful venture capitalists or angel investors and see how they do their due diligence, and you'll notice that most of them, I think all of them, the really highly successful ones, focus 90 to 99% of their efforts not on the business model, because they're generally isn't one at the time they invest, or it's very, very, very new, but they focus a ton on the people who are founding and leading the business, because you can't tell where the company's going to be with certainty in 5 years, but you can see who's right in front of your face and see who has the potential to do something amazing in the future.
So then, according to your research, you know, what is the blueprint for building dominant, sustainable businesses?
Bobby, it comes down to people. And if you think about it, all a business is a group of people. And so, say, 100 years ago and before that, or even early 1900s, there was more tangible assets, and businesses were more capital intensive. However, if you look at today, most companies are a name, computers, desks, and people. However, you know, there's some industries that have a little bit more capital intensity with physical assets than that. Majority are just people. So give a competitor enough money and they'll copy your product, and give them enough time and they can copy your distribution and network effect. Give them a few more years and patents will expire. But give a competitor all the time, all the money, and they'll have a really, really, really hard time competing against a company with a strong culture and a strong franchise. And so remember, most of these companies die out as forward-thinking, creative, entrepreneurial organizations, you know, come into the mix. And these are teeny, teeny, tiny companies. They could be public microcaps, or they could be private venture capital-backed companies. So companies with a strong culture of highly talented-driven people continually challenge themselves to offer the best-in-class service and products, and they'll always be one step, two steps, three steps ahead of the crowd. Mm-hmm. And these highly-performing organizations really set up, they're set up as perpetual recruitment centers, attracting, training, retaining the best human capital. So if you think about it, it's a company who, of course, is a group of people. They have a very strong culture that perpetuates itself, and they can maintain that. They can outlast, you know, the intelligent, fanatic leader, and they can sustain great, you know, performance year after year. And even when, you know, these new, scrappy, entrepreneurial companies come into the fray with good technology. It can be a step ahead. Mm-hmm. And all the companies keep looking at this one company that's always a step ahead, and they're pretty much just trying to catch up to them.
So then, what is your hope for everyone who reads the Intelligent Fanatics Project?
Great question. So Ian and I hope that investors can build their pattern recognition system to find intelligent fanatics of today and tomorrow. And really, if you, the microcap has a really bad rap, microcap land. So really, we want to build more credibility in the microcap space. Since the potential to find and invest in high-quality organizations, that's where you find them. And for entrepreneurs to build better organizations, and the extraordinary profits, you know, should take care of themselves after that. Mm-hmm.
So this is a fun question that I was at. I'm very much looking forward to hearing the answer. So do you have an example from your personal experience encountering or investing in a microcap run by an intelligent fanatic?
So that's a great question. So while I've only been investing in microcap space for a few years, I definitely see a few managers that are showing some of the initial signs of intelligent fanatics. And I also kind of preface that stating that giving somebody a label early in their corporate building careers might be somewhat limiting. So, you know, if we go up to a manager and say you're an intelligent fanatic and it kind of becomes a widespread, understood word, then they kind of catch their ego and it might not be good, because a lot of these great leaders, they direct their success to their employees while taking, you know, any of the blame themselves. But one in the company I can mention, like I said, there's a couple of them that I'm personally invested in that could fit the mold, and there are others that I'm not personally invested in that I think could potentially have the characteristics of an intelligent fanatic. But the one I can mention, of course, I do own it, is BioSyent, and it's run by a very astute leader named Rene Gorham, and he's got many of the long-term vision. He's got the long-term vision. He's got a lot of the other soft qualitative characteristics. He and also D'Souza, his partner, I think that's, I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the corporation that they're trying to build is showing some of the early signs. And of course, the culture as well, if you really dig deep down into who they're trying to attract, who they're trying to motivate, and who they're trying to retain, it's really interesting. And of course, they have a model, a business model, that could potentially have a wide-ranging market share to penetrate. But we'll see. I could be totally wrong, but he's definitely a high-quality individual that I have partnered with myself.
Well, tell him to start writing down his corporate culture values.
No, then everybody will know. We just got to get out there and we got to do our DD. And people will start to see. And it's just really interesting to, you know, like, focus on defining something, defining a pattern to which, you know, like, in the microcap club, there's a lot of guys that are looking at the qualitative aspects and trying to pinpoint these quality companies before anybody else knows about them.
Well, guess what? I'm going to try and befriend the guy who or girl who's in the microcap club who happens to be a corporate recruiter, because I feel like they will know right off the bat. Anyway, so Sean, you know, we're about to wrap up here. Where can our audience go and find more information about you, and where can they go buy the Intelligent Fanatics Project book?
So, of course, I'm tied with Microcap Club. You can go there, microcapclub.com. We have educational articles that we post up on Intelligent Fanatics and also other material. And, of course, members within are, of course, trying to find the next Intelligent Fanatic, and they're trying to find quality companies. Also, For myself, I run Unconventional Capital Wisdom. You can find that at uncapwisdom.com. It gives you a little bit more idea of what I do with my investing. And also, you can find the book pretty much at amazon.com. And so anybody in different country, they type in their Amazon store, and they'll be able to find the Intelligent Phonetics Project.
Sean, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I really do appreciate you giving your time, and thank you again for writing the Intelligent Phonetics Project.
Well, thank you very much, Bobby, and thank you for taking the time to read it as well.
Thank you, and now go enjoy the newborn.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Sean, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.